We had the Hail Murray.
Murray back to throw. Rolling left in trouble. Got to launch it. He does. Into the end zone. Jump ball. Is it caught? Is it caught? Oh, my goodness, it's caught. DeAndre Hopkins caught it. He caught it for a touchdown with 1 second left.
The DK Metcalf chase down meme.
Save a touchdown.
It was unbelievable how much ground he made up.
Tom Brady reaffirming his immortality.
The one fake handoff, Brady under center, throws a line drive, touchdown Antonio Brown has caught a touchdown pass for the Buccaneers. Tom Brady is a Super Bowl champion again for the record-setting seventh time.
So yes, the NFL, America's most powerful cultural institution, successfully navigated the gauntlet that was 2020. And now, with the new season set to begin tomorrow and the pandemic still very, very real, Mina Kimes is here to tell us what the NFL might do for an encore and try not at all to contain her excitement. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Wednesday, September 8th. This is ESPN Daily. So you're doing something a little different for this NFL season, right? You're actually going to be in Bristol for a lot of these Sundays. Is that right?
I am, Pablo. Yeah, I'm going to be in Bristol to do NFL Live in person, in studio, which also means I will be watching football with our colleagues.
So I got to ask you about this war room, and I think that's what you call it. I don't know if that's officially what it's called, if there's like a placard on the outside of the room, but paint the picture of what it's like for you to be there, basically macro dosing the NFL alongside all of these colleagues of ours.
Well, first, I don't like the insinuation that I'm the only person who calls it the war room. Like you said, you call it the war room. I didn't come up with the nickname, Pablo. I think it's an appropriate name, though, because it conveys the level of seriousness with which the people contained therein apply to watching football.
Take us inside there. What does it look like? What does it feel like?
Adjacent to the ESPN cafeteria, it's a room with a wall of televisions playing all of the games. And a number of people, you know, your Matt Hasselbecks, your Chris Bermans, reacting to said games.
It could go all the way.
Boomer's there.
Boomer is there.
How are you approaching your job as an analyst in these conditions?
I act in a way that is befitting of my status, I think, amongst the NFL Illuminati, which is I try not to say anything.
So let's get to the news, Mina, because I want to get your reaction to something else, which is what happened in New England last week. The Patriots released Cam Newton, their starting quarterback, because Mac Jones, their rookie, their first-round rookie, is now going to be the official starter for Bill Belichick this season. So when you heard all of that, how did you respond?
Pablo, I was surprised. Not necessarily by the fact that Mac Jones was named the starter, although it was a little bit surprising because all offseason we've been hearing that Cam had the job locked down. Now, Mac Jones is a first-round pick. You expect first-round picks to start at some point, but didn't know for sure when some point was going to arrive. No, the more surprising aspect of this was Cam Newton being released. That came out of nowhere.
Cam Newton has been cut by the New England Patriots.
Wow, the Patriots have released Cam Newton. I am very surprised.
We should note, you know, Cam missed some practices because he was placed on the NFL's COVID-19 list. And Mac Jones apparently seized that opportunity to assert his place as the starter. He also seized every opportunity he was given in preseason games. He looked excellent.
And Jones takes the snap on 3rd and 5. Throws the back shoulder. Oh. Wilkerson comes back to it. Well timed for a first down.
Cash money throw right there. Fifth step hit. Boom. Ball's out.
But Cam, in addition to being on a cheap contract, you know, is probably the best backup quarterback, or would have been rather the best backup quarterback in the NFL. So to me, it was surprising not that Bill Belichick chose Mac Jones over Cam, but that it seemed like he chose Brian Hoyer or Jarrett Stidham, the other backups, over Cam. Now, I should say, we don't know what Cam asked for, if he was interested in a release, and we don't know exactly why Bill Belichick made this decision, but the fact that Newton is no longer a Patriot is surprising.
So the Patriots last season with Cam as their starter, I mean, they were pretty average, I guess you would say. And now the Patriots have this dynamic where, look, if you squint at Mac Jones, this is a dangerous dynamic. He kind of looks, it's that thing of like your new girlfriend kind of looks like your ex, which is to say that there is this question of, can Bill Belichick succeed without Tom Brady? And here comes Mac Jones to play the role of maybe the replacement of that guy. So what are you expecting from all of that in New England?
Well, first, I hope all of your ex-girlfriends don't listen to this podcast. I just
want to great point.
Throw that out there.
Yeah.
I expect big things from this team, not because of Mac Jones, but because this Patriots team around him should be a lot better than the Patriots team we saw last year. You know, the Patriots had a ton of talent walk out the door in free agency going into the 2020 season. They had players like Dante Hightower, who's really the heart of the defense, opt out because of COVID. And they didn't have a lot of talent at skill player amongst the wide receivers and tight ends. So Bill Belichick went on a massive spending spree in free agency, bringing in tight ends like Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, and then Matt Judon, the pass rusher. And I expect this team to be good. Now, I don't expect them to be better than the Buffalo Bills, who I view as probably the second best team in the AFC and the best team in the division. But I think the Patriots, frankly, with either quarterback, Mac Jones or Cam Newton, are a playoff team.
Wow. Okay, so I want to spin around to a different team with quarterback questions, because the Chicago Bears, Mina, look, they're going with Andy Dalton as QB1, as they have now declared it, to start this season. This is in spite of Justin Fields, their first-round rookie, pretty much looking as good as anyone would imagine he would look during the preseason. So help me make sense of this. Why is this happening?
Well, I think you can't look to anything that happened the preseason for an explanation as to why the Bears didn't decide to start Justin Fields right away, because he looked really exciting, electric even.
Four-man rush, Fields hangs in there, starts to close, he leaves the pocket, ejects left to the 10, to the 5, pulls into the end zone for the touchdown! Touchdown, Bears!
But you did see something, and I guess actually this is something that you did see in the preseason that might hint at why he's not out there immediately, which is that he was constantly under duress.
Pressure on Fields. Oh, the helmet came off. That's going to be a flag as well. And that ball is loose.
This is what you worry about with a young quarterback. Clearly, he's looking the opposite direction.
Earlier, I talked about how the Patriots have a really good team, and Mac Jones is playing behind one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. Not the case with Justin Fields. So while I would have personally made him the starter immediately because I think he gives this team the best chance to win, I could see a logic, or perhaps I guess a rationale, that while Justin Fields gives them the best chance to win, it's not best for his career to trot him out against the Rams defense and Aaron Donald behind this offensive line. Now, I will add, I don't agree with that line of thinking, because while it's Aaron Donald week one, they're playing Myles Garrett in week three when they play Cleveland, and many, many terrifying pass rushers along the way. And at some point, Justin Fields is going to be the starter, just not week one.
So I assume that all of these opinions and takes that you have, obviously they come from you grinding so much tape. When you're doing that, which team would you say brings you the most joy when you're deep in your film study?
I really enjoyed watching the 49ers the final week of preseason, because Kyle Shanahan, their head coach, did something kind of wacky, and it appears to be something he plans on doing during the regular season as well, which is he played two quarterbacks, Pablo, both Jimmy Garoppolo, the incumbent starter, and Trey Lance. We've been talking about these rookies. He was their first round pick. They both played on the same drives, cycling in and out.
Jimmy's coming
Here
off the field, and Trey Lance is coming on the field. This is something they did extensively on the practice field right in the middle of the series. Trey Lance jumps in for a 2nd and 10.
This is something that is divisive. Literally, he is dividing time between them. But it's really fascinating, and especially in the case of Lance, because so much of his talent, his value he provides to an offense, is what he brings to the run game. Kyle Shanahan is also, I think, the best run game designer in the NFL.
Yes.
So I was really excited week three in the last week to see him used, deployed really as a threat.
And here's Lance keeping in and walking in for the touchdown. He knew he'd keep it. And that was easy money.
I am very excited to see what that run game looks like with Trey Lance in. And I'm even more just kind of intrigued by how he's going to use both of the quarterbacks in conjunction with each other.
Yeah, I'm super intrigued by this because it feels like it's just a formula for so many arguments about whether or not this is a good idea. And it's also about the frequency, right? Like the idea that it's not just going to be, you know, a Taysom Hill, Drew Brees thing, but it sounds, Mina, correct me if I'm wrong here, it sounds like Kyle Shanahan's going to be switching off far more frequently and far more unpredictably, at least by design.
Yes, and absolutely. And I think bringing up Taysom Hill and Drew Brees is instructive because, Paolo, you remember, people would get really annoyed when Taysom Hill would come into the football game.
Yes.
And I think that's why there's skepticism about this whole experiment, even though there's a lot of excitement about Trey Lance. I'd say certainly more excitement than there was, you know, about Taysom Hill. And some of that also reflected that Saints fans were like, Drew Brees is a Hall of Fame quarterback, just leaving Drew Brees. I don't think Niners fans feel the same way about Jimmy Garoppolo. But what I'm saying is this whole plan, this strategy, two quarterbacks, it's just not something that has historically worked.
Well, the phrase, right, the idiom, the proverb is, if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one.
Yes, or if you have two girlfriends, you don't have one.
All right, I want to get to the other rookie quarterbacks in this class because that's what I'm going to be watching for in week one, to be honest. I'm going to be looking at Trevor Lawrence out in Jacksonville also, and then Zach Wilson here in New York. What is intriguing to you about those two guys?
Both players really flashed, I think, the traits that you saw in college in the preseason. Wilson looked a lot more comfortable than Trevor Lawrence, which I don't think is a reflection necessarily of any disparity in their talent, but more the offenses around them. Jets fans had to be really excited, not just what they saw from Zach, the arm talent, his ability to make these like absurd Mahomesian throws.
Wilson, tight end, the block, and he's got his receiver downfield, caught by Corey Davis.
Pocket mobility and also vision and awareness of where you are in the pocket, all those things demonstrated by Zach Wilson, and then the ability.
But also the offense around him, the play design, the wide receivers. Corey Davis looked tremendous, who the Jets signed in free agency, but they did it against backups. Let's see how they look against starters. With Trevor, I think you have an opposite feeling as a fan where you saw the qualities that you loved about him in college, the also incredible arm talent and athleticism, but you know, the intelligence and accuracy and just the playmaking, all there. But the offense at times did not look up to snuff. And I'm speaking especially of the offensive line. Some of their skill players were out. DJ Chark's number one wide receiver, didn't get to play with. So I think as a Jags fan, you're happy about Lawrence, but you're a little bit worried about the circumstances he's being dropped into.
And those circumstances, just to put a name on it, would that be Urban Meyer? Is that who you're looking at and saying to yourself, okay, I don't know if he has made the college to the NFL transition that you would hope for if you're a Jaguars fan?
He's had a rocky preseason.
All right, I still have many, many questions about Urban Meyer and also about the actual good teams in this league after the break.
Now,
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Mina, I find myself thinking about Philip Rivers on days like today. A guy who might be a Hall of Famer, who is going to be greatly missed for that reason, but actually for another reason even more, which is to say, that dude was just really fun to watch, right? I mean, it's the fourth quarter comebacks. It's the fourth quarter mistakes. It's the human roller coaster ride that is Philip Rivers. That has been a part of everyone's Sundays for a decade. So who in your mind is the most likely to fill that void that Philip Rivers has left?
Well, if I had to pick a spiritual successor, swear I'm not pandering with this answer.
Yes, do it.
Now I want to pivot and say Jameis Winston, who was the other guy you were talking that I was thinking of. But I'm going to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
And not just because of Ryan Fitzpatrick, who has a lot of the attributes you just described when it comes to Rivers, the sort of YOLO of it all, shall we say, but also because he's on a really good football team.
Yeah.
One that I'm excited to watch, one in a division that they can absolutely win, which is the NFC East. Washington has, in my mind, one of the three best defenses in the NFL. Incredible defensive front. And then a lot of really exciting skill players. Antonio Gibson, Terry McLaurin, Dyami Brown, who they drafted this year. So I'm interested in seeing if we get Fitz magic or Fitz tragic,
okay,
which is a real, no, that's a real thing that happened. I know you like to block it out. and I feel like we won't have the answer until, in the tradition of Philip Rivers, you know, it's like week four and he's down by one score with 45 seconds left in the game.
So to go elsewhere in the NFC East, I'm looking at the Cowboys. I'm looking at Dak Prescott. I'm looking at the fact that he has not one, but two ankle surgeries. He's also been dealing with a shoulder issue in the preseason. But the roster, as we know, is stacked. This should be a team with really high expectations. So what do you make of the Cowboys? And most importantly, maybe, do you think Dak can pick up where he left off before he got hurt in all those ways?
So those are two very different questions. What do I think of the Cowboys and do I think Dak Prescott can pick up? Because the second question is an easier one. I think he can. By all accounts, this is an injury he can bounce back from. The shoulder issue we're hearing is not terribly serious. And he's playing in an offense that should be explosive. The offensive line is healthy again. We'll see if they have any injuries that could be an issue. But this is one of the two or three deepest wide receiver groups in the NFL. You know, between Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup, and CeeDee Lamb, that's really like a 1A, 1B, 1C situation. They are a nightmare to defend, and I think Dak Prescott is a very good quarterback. All of that could not matter if the defense looks as bad as they did last year.
How bad were they last year, to be clear about that?
Well, they were a nightmare.
Lost to Washington on Thanksgiving, got dominated in the fourth quarter, and now tonight, absolutely shredded on the ground, and it has been pretty easy against this Dallas defense running it.
Which is why Mike Nolan, who's their defensive coordinator, was let go and replaced with Dan Quinn, and I think it's going to be incumbent upon him to coach up a group that has some holes in the secondary, in particular at defensive tackle. Their first round draft pick this year, Micah Parsons, looked very good and explosive in the preseason. But there's a lot of issues on this side of the football. I will say, though, because the offense has so much upside, the defense probably just needs to be average for them to compete.
So if the expectations in Dallas are hinging on that defense, I'm curious what you make of the expectations in LA. The Rams, they have a really good defense. Now they have a veteran quarterback, the guy that seemingly Sean McVay wanted more than anything else this offseason in Matthew Stafford. And I know you did color commentary in the booth for the Rams. in the preseason. You've been close to the team. So I'm curious most of all about, like, is this whole experiment going to work? Is it going to pay off in the way that clearly Los Angeles hopes?
Well, you wouldn't get that answer from watching the Rams preseason because Sean McVay does not play any of his starters. but I was in the proximity to some of those starters, and I think they're very promising. The offense, right, should be better than they were last year. I think the hope is that Stafford unlocks a vertical element. You know, he ranked like second in the NFL in air yards per attempt. This is a team that wants to go deep, and I think that they can. I think the concern is whether the defense, which was really, really strong last year, might regress a little bit with the departure of their defensive coordinator, some of the talent in the secondary, but I still expect them to be very good net-net. Now, the problem, Pablo, is that unlike Dallas, the Rams are not in the NFC East. They are in the NFC West, which is the apocalyptic hellscape of divisions. There could be very likely three playoff teams coming out of this group, and it's really hard to pick a winner given how strong the competition is.
Yeah, hold on a second here, though, because I know that you're a person with a Seahawks tattoo on your arm, but I also, I mean, Mina, I also see you, and I used to call it the Radio Shack polo shirt that you used to wear calling these games for the Rams. I now see it as the Best Buy blue polo shirt, so how am I supposed to make sense of any of these opinions?
It's all an emotional hedge, Pablo. I win either way.
That's what my ex-girlfriends used to tell me as well, in fact. Are those teams, though, those two teams that you're emotionally hedging here, are they the actual favorites in the NFC, then?
Some people might have either one of them. I think they're certainly contenders, but for me, the clear favorite to come out of the NFC is Tampa Bay. I mean, we're talking about a team that literally brought everyone back, which is very difficult and very unusual for Super Bowl teams. Tom Brady, who despite being approximately 65 years old, looks like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He actually played in the preseason, by the way, which is interesting.
Yeah, why did he do that, by the way? Because I know he like lost the knee brace for the first time in his life. Did he just want to show that, in fact, he is younger than all of us still think?
Why does Tom Brady do anything to completely mess with us and assert his ongoing dominance over humanity? I don't know. Yeah. But they're really, really good on both sides of the football, and I expect them to win their division and be in pole position to come out of the NFC too.
So, okay, so that's your NFC pick. I understand it. That makes sense. The AFC, though, who are your favorites there?
So I'm going to be boring and give a really similar answer, which is the other team in the Super Bowl, Kansas City. They have more questions on their roster than Tampa Bay. You know, they completely remade their offensive line, which was a problem and arguably why they lost the Super Bowl, some of the injuries there. But there are actually holes on this team, unlike Tampa Bay. The assumption, and I think this is a safe one, is that Patrick Mahomes is the ultimate eraser. He covers up all problems, even though he couldn't do it when he was, you know, playing behind a bunch of turnstiles in the Super Bowl.
Hold on, Mina. Really? There is no one who can unseat the Chiefs in the AFC? That's what you're leaving me with as our football expert?
I know. My picks to make it to the Super Bowl are the teams who were in the Super Bowl last year. Really,
yeah,
electric
real,
stuff.
Real helpful, yeah.
I'm really high on the Bills, the team that almost made it to the Super Bowl, because they look stacked. And while Josh Allen hasn't played a ton in the preseason, like the Bucs, they pretty much brought everyone back, including notably their offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, who I thought was going to leave and get a head coaching job. And Josh Allen, in his limited snaps, appears to be picking up right where he left off, throwing missiles.
Good protection. Allen fires a strike. Touchdown! Gabriel Davis! A 31-yard score. And I don't see any rust. Do you, Steve?
On the other side of the football, you know, I had questions about the Bills' pass rush. They drafted two players, Gregory Rousseau and Boogie Basham, to try to help Jerry Hughes up front. And Rousseau in particular, along with A.J. Epinesa, who's a player they already had on their team, look like they're going to really help them get to the quarterback. So I am very optimistic about this Bills team.
So as I officially look forward to you being triumphantly thrown through a table at a tailgate as you are hailed as the Buffalo Bills' new queen, You mentioned the Bills, which means I have to ask you about COVID and another bill, Bill Belichick, as the NFL tries to make sense of all of that.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Mina, I was pretty fascinated by the dynamic that I saw unfold in two places last week. In Jacksonville, we had Urban Meyer in a press conference confessing, and I use that verb strategically here because it did feel like a confession that he should not have necessarily given in public, that part of the reason he cut some of his own players to get down to the 53-man roster was because they were unvaccinated.
I know you can't give specifics, but could you share with us whether a vaccinated versus unvaccinated player had an impact on a roster decision?
Everyone was considered. That was part of the production. What's his, you know, let's start talking about this. And then also, is he vaccinated or not? Can I say that that was a decision maker? It was certainly in consideration.
Meanwhile, in New England, Bill Belichick got asked if his release of Cam Newton, which we had talked about before, was due to the fact that he had not been vaccinated. And he very firmly responded no.
As well, I guess the point with Cam was that he didn't get sick, but he was still affected by it. So that didn't play a role in your decision?
No, we have other players on the team who weren't vaccinated, as I would say probably does every other team in the league.
Now, multiple unvaccinated players have been fined by the league already for breaking mask guidelines in places like Buffalo. But with the Delta variant still very much a thing that is spreading, the NFL has said, yeah, they're interested in a vaccine mandate for players, but of course the NFLPA would need to approve that. So given all of that, what do you make of how the league has approached COVID and vaccinations so far this season?
Well, first of all, it's a mandate without calling it a mandate, right? Like, it's very obvious that you don't have to be vaccinated to play in the NFL this year, but it's going to be very difficult if you're not. We are hearing, people in and around the NFL, that coaches, GMs, whatever, care about availability. And your availability is very obviously affected by whether or not you've gotten the shot. In fact, if you test positive and you're unvaccinated, you're out for 10 days at least. Whereas if you're vaccinated, you can get you, a player, or whoever, can get back in the span of 24 hours with a couple of negative tests. So as a coach, you can imagine that it matters a great deal. You're just not allowed to say so, which is what Urban Meyer did.
Yeah, the idea that there are these incentives that make it so clear that you should get this thing in order to play football, and yet some people are not. I mean, if you're the NFLPA, Mina, do you handle this in a different way here? Are you just caught in between a responsibility to represent everybody in your constituency? And also, I presume, you know, the logic and reason of like, hey, this is kind of the reality we happen to live in given this whole pandemic thing.
Well, PA, the Players Association, agreed to all the rules that I just described in terms of like the timelines and the regulations that apply to players. So I think it's pretty obvious that they want players to get the shot, just like the league. But then once those rules are agreed to, it's the job of the union, like any union, to represent all of their players based on the rules that have been laid out. And I think that's what they're doing, you know, walking that line between the goals of the players and the league and the rights of those players that have been collectively bargained. Now, I should say, you mentioned that, you know, some players are unvaccinated. I think you're much more likely to hear about players not being vaccinated if they're stars or they're not expendable. Because let me tell you, if you're a player who is not a star or is not even, you know, guaranteed a spot on the roster, you probably got the shot because otherwise you're probably not on an NFL team.
Yeah, I think of unvaccinated quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson, like Kirk Cousins. I think of noted unvaccinated rap star Cole Beasley. And I wonder, Mina, given this hierarchy that's taken shape in locker rooms, do you think that this dynamic is going to be a major storyline as the regular season pushes on?
I think it's going to be a storyline, Pablo, if players actually miss games. Fans might not care now if a wide receiver or a quarterback has to miss a few days of practice, but I'll tell you, they will care if they are not playing on Sunday. Not just fans, the players, the coaches, their teammates, everyone in and around the league. It will be a huge story and it will cause drama.
All right, speaking of drama, Mina, I will let you go back to your precious war room and all your cool new football friends, and we'll check back in with you later.
We're still friends, Pablo.
That's what my ex-girlfriend said. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.